Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
Nicholas Grossman is a political science professor at the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. Professor Grossman, welcome to WGN. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about your studies. How are you expert?
The main things I teach about are U.S. foreign policy and national security and war. So it's been a big bunch of years for me that when, and I'd say actually especially what I focus on is terrorism and insurgency. So basically when bad things happen in the world, things I really wish wouldn't happen in the world, it's good for my career. It's a sort of a weird paradox.
And is Greenland important to our national interest?
Not really, no. And to the extent that it is important as a fairly large landmass in the North Atlantic, it is controlled by Denmark, which is our NATO ally, and the U.S. military has access to it, and there's no special threat to it, so no.
Are you familiar with the accusations Donald Trump makes that with China and Russia being ever more aggressive, that we need to protect ourselves? He said it's not just a national interest, it's a global security issue. Just comment a little more on that.
Well, that as a broad approach is true, but the places where the United States and Taiwan are actually competing are places like, say, Taiwan, or the Korean Peninsula, with China backing North Korea, the U.S. backing South Korea, possibly with Australia, with things like cyber attacks. China has been trying to expand its influence into Africa, and the U.S. has been competing for it there, but not in the North Atlantic, where the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, you know, NATO's full name, is by far the most prominent. China doesn't have military assets there. Russia doesn't either, for that matter. Russia's Navy, to the extent it is currently active still, is a lot busy fighting Ukraine and otherwise running away from Syria. And then to the extent it's active, it's more in places right near Russia, like, say, near Sweden and Finland, Estonia, Latvia, not over in the North Atlantic. So the broader idea of the U.S. having competition with China and Russia is right. But the idea that U.S. allies such as Denmark or Canada are in some way harming the U.S. in that fight, rather than doing a lot to strengthen the U.S. in that fight, has it backwards, that it is U.S. allies that help make the U.S. stronger against those countries.
So I've gotten a couple of emails from listeners who were kind of almost chuckling at the notion that as a NATO, they're not a country, a territory. If they were to be invaded, say, by the United States, we would have to come to a fellow NATO member's aid. So maybe our army is fighting our navy or something like that.
Yeah, and that, yes, I mean, technically. And that both is, you know, it's kind of fun to laugh at because it highlights the absurdity of it. And I can't tell how much this is at all a serious foreign policy, if it is what amounts to international trolling, if it is playing the media, if he even knows which one of it it is, I can't tell. I can tell you at least that there have not been the orders given to the Pentagon. You know, of course, Trump isn't president yet, but even in his first term when he talked about this, did not give the sort of orders to make the sort of plans that would prepare for a military attack. But also at the other level, it's quite serious in that you could view it as, oh, if this actually happened, well, then the U.S. would be treaty obligated to attack the United States or defend against the United States.
Right.
And yet what that also means is you can view it in a darker light, which is it is undermining the alliance itself, that creating those sort of absurdities where instead of NATO allies being our closest partners, you know, the countries that all said right away that they would help in the Afghanistan war after 9/11, for example. Denmark actually sent one of the most numbers of troops after the UK. I think Denmark was third or fourth in terms of the numbers of troops that they sent to Afghanistan. So by threatening them, it is undermining the confidence in the alliance and undermining the unity of the alliance rather than strengthening it. And that's the sort of thing that Trump had hinted as in his a foreign policy goal in the first term, but backed off from it somewhat. And it would be consistent with the affinity that he has expressed for Vladimir Putin's Russia and Russia's foreign policy, because Russia would absolutely love it if NATO was weaker.
I'll ask you in a minute if it would be somehow advantageous to us to actually have Greenland. Maybe that would be kind of cool. But they are a net drain on the Danish government. And Donald Trump described it as a real estate deal. If we made a more attractive offer, maybe they'd like to fall under the umbrella of the United States. A comment on that.
At least as far as I know, the people in Greenland have not expressed an interest in that. And I suppose somebody could ask them. I haven't seen anybody from the Trump administration ask them about it. They've made some statements. They have semi-autonomy with Denmark overarching as the power, but where they are autonomously governed. And they haven't said anything about it. I mean, in general, you know, the United States is appealing. Can see why a lot of people would want to be a part of it or perhaps move here. But no, they haven't said any of that in particular. And Greenland as real estate is mostly icy, you know, like the old line about how Iceland is green and Greenland is icy. The population is very low. It's not like there's good farmland or mining or other stuff that might make it valuable.
But we did buy Alaska once upon a time. We did acquire Hawaii once upon a time. So it's not unprecedented the United States would have some expansionist designs for a variety of reasons. I wonder if there's a mineral store there. I wonder if under all of that ice, there's something worthwhile.
It's always possible. And you brought up Alaska. That's a good example of when the United States bought Alaska, we did not know about the big oil deposits there. And so it ended up originally was called a folly. And then later, after oil was discovered, became very profitable long term as a really valuable purchase. Although, of course, that was one where it was a voluntary agreement between two countries. Russia controlled it and sold it to the U.S. voluntarily. It wasn't something the U.S. forcibly took. But also, when we have to reach that far back into history, that shows you how much the world has changed, that the United States used to do those sort of things before World War II, that the world wars ever since then and with the United Nations established the rule that countries have sovereignty, that they have independence, that countries don't redraw borders by force, that that is officially outlawed. Of course, a, you know, number of times countries break it, but that we've seen a lot less of those sort of imperialist conquests, that the United States also used to have colonies like in the Philippines and had subsequently given that up and now has a good military partnership with the Philippines. So still gains a lot of the national security benefits from it without having those negative aspects of trying to administer a foreign country and run it as an occupying colonial power when the people don't want it.
Nicholas Grossman is a professor of political science at the University of Illinois. Is the Panama Canal Zone more intriguing, more relevant in some way?
Somewhat, although it's pretty similar. So it's not, Panama is not a treaty ally in the way that a NATO country is, but the United States had built the Panama Canal and then had made a deal with Panama, a treaty, this was in the late 1970s, that said that Panama would get to have control of the canal and that in 1999, the U.S. would officially hand it to Panama, which happened. But the treaty also says that the United States reserves the right to use military force to guarantee the flow of international commerce, which means that even under this treaty, if anybody messes with the Panama Canal, especially if anybody messes with U.S. ships moving back and forth between the Panama Canal, the U.S. military has the legal right to do something about it. So the United States might not own the Panama Canal anymore, but it uses it at will and is effectively the dominant military power there. So there isn't something really, it's not clear to me what would be gained by the U.S. taking it over as opposed to having a friendly relationship with Panama that allows the U.S. to use it at will and to defend it with its military.
Well, two things the president-elect says we would gain if we had more control or absolute control over the Panama Canal would be that China would no longer have an opportunity to do espionage in the zone. He said they've got, he said they control, they're running the Panama Canal. We know that's not true, but they do have a couple of ports there, and maybe they have access that makes us uncomfortable. The other thing is, if the rates are being set by this Panama Canal Authority, maybe they're charging the United States more for the commerce going through, and we could regulate that to our advantage. What's your thought about all that?
On the fees, I would have to look into it. I don't have the exact numbers off the top of my head. But military operations are awfully expensive. So the I'm I would be surprised if there would be some sort of net benefit, especially since if the United States has a lot of money, a lot of commerce, also the U.S. has allies. If the U.S. was getting ripped off, an easy thing to say would be, we're not using it anymore. If China was using it in such a way that was threatening to the U.S. national security, the U.S. military has the right to do something about it. And on espionage especially, they do that regardless. That we had China spying everywhere. You remember there were the spy balloons that went across the U.S.
Yeah.
There have been a bunch of big hacks by China. The U.S. and China are very much engaged in a high-level spy versus spy game, and that is going to happen no matter what. It also happens in places where the U.S. controls decently more, even, say, Washington, D.C.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, one last thing, Nicholas, though. This all just seems so random to me, and it also seems, at least in the case of, well, in both cases, a little punching down. I didn't see any of this coming, and I don't understand the point of it all. What's your thought about that?
I have a similar reaction to it also, and I think that that's the right approach. That and it's something that a lot of media and public and other governments are going to have to adjust to with the new Trump administration, is that a good example of this was some reporters asked, could you rule out, asked him yesterday at a press conference, could you rule out using military force, against these countries, and or especially against a NATO ally? And a typical U.S. president would be thinking things like, I don't want to get people upset. I want to avoid a risk of there being a negative reaction of somebody doing something crazy in advance. If they believe the U.S. is going to attack them, maybe they launch an attack first or try to do something else like that. We want to get rid of all that uncertainty and chaos. So I'll say, no, there's no way we're going to do that. And we will continue to use different tools at our disposal to advance our interests and, blah, blah, blah. And Trump doesn't seem to approach it that way. So how much of this was him just tossing out an idea and, maybe punching down a bit or kind of being brash, being a bit of a bully?
It's a flex.
A flex. And seeing that other people react, a lot of people, the media is reacting. You and I are talking about it. People are asking him about it. The other governments are saying, oh, what's he going to do? And most positive spin I can put on that is it throws them off balance. I don't really know why you want to throw allies off balance. Seems like adversaries are the one you want to throw off balance. But either way, they could kind of throw them off balance, maybe set them up for some sort of negotiation if they're afraid of the alternative. But I don't know if it is actually a coherent policy. And like in the first term, he says a lot of stuff, and sometimes it gets followed up with actual policy, and we'd have to see. I think the actions matter more than the words. Not the words don't matter, but the actions would matter more. And so if we see things like orders given to the U.S. military of different U.S. naval posture in the Caribbean or on the Pacific side of the canal, of movements of a U.S. aircraft carrier mm-hmm. towards Greenland, mm-hmm. that other things wow. that cost a lot of money but are actual actions, that would be next level. That would turn into an actual policy. For now, it seems something like putting on a reality TV show, trolling people, goosing the media, getting ratings, maybe trying to throw people off balance or make them uncomfortable, maybe even just by impulse. And I don't know, and I don't think anybody really knows, but a lot of people are dancing to that tune and not paying attention to the various other things.
Well, you're making me think we have to end this conversation now, Nicholas, but you're making me think about how much capital, political capital, how much time we spent talking about the wall, and that did not substantially change in the 4 years of his first term. So, yeah, I wouldn't expect a major real estate deal in Greenland or the canal ownership to change much either. Nicholas Grossman is the professor of political science, the University of Illinois in Urbana. Nice to talk to you, Nicholas. We'll call you again.
Nice to talk to you, too.